Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
Hello and welcome to SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the lazy Luke Cutforth.
I prefer lethargic.
That would have been better, wouldn't it? This week, we're talking about skiving snoozes and the necessity of naps. But first, we have a wee comment from YouTube.com. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, I think I used to work there.
So this one says, for the record, the scientific word for the mouth of the pee hole is meatus. M-E-A-T-U-S, meatus. There you go. I'd like to meatus your meatus. So, I've also got a question for you. The question is, and if you're listening on Spotify or any other place where podcasts are available, get to the YouTube comments and answer this question. The question is, how many hours did you sleep last night?
Oh, about 7.
If we added both of our sleep times together, we'd get a nice, healthy 9-ish hours.
Yay! That's more than we need, isn't it? We only need 8. That's fantastic news.
Go us! We're doing so well.
So rested. Hang on a sec. Were you up researching this episode?
No.
Okay.
No. I did that this morning. No. Before we start, I do want to give a shout out to Ian Is Fun on TikTok. He does science kind of things on TikTok. He's good. He's enjoyable. The reason I'm giving a shout out is because he made a TikTok on this topic and I thought, oh yeah, we've not done sleep deprivation yet. I'm going to do that.
Okay.
And I did it.
Great. I love sleep deprivation. You start seeing stuff and stuff goes all kooky.
To be honest with you, look, there are probably easier ways of seeing stuff and they're probably healthier too. So shall we get on to this? What is sleep?
Well, the thing is, no one really knows, do they? But as in they know what it is, but we don't know quite why we're doing it. But it's where you sort of go unconscious for hopefully more than 2 hours and you can't move or you don't move, that sort of stuff. You asked for a definition of sleep, Corey. I don't think you can expect... what you're expecting.
We delved very quickly into one of those podcasts. You know the podcast where it's two men and it's always two men talking about nonsense, very confident. Joe Rogan and other such ones where you're like, well, no one really knows what sleep is actually, man. Yeah, like scientists have been researching sleep for millennia and we still don't know what it is. You know, if you ask a scientist, a sleep scientist, what is sleep? He'll tell you, I don't know.
Do you want to buy these vitamins?
They'll make your erections super
muscular.
So, yeah, sleep. Defining sleep is difficult. It's that sort of unconsciousy state we go into every night, hopefully, that we use to do a number of things, but we're still not sure about why we need to do it. I mean, we know a lot of things, that sleep is necessary for, but we don't necessarily know the deep question of why do we sleep, if that makes sense.
Or why we need to be asleep for those things to happen.
Exactly. That's it. So, like, why do we need to go into a state of sort of, not exactly torpor, but, your body kind of slows down a bit, right? Your breathing slows. I'm pretty sure your body temperature drops a bit as well. Like, you know, there are changes that happen sort of physiologically during sleep, and we don't necessarily understand why sleep as a concept needs to exist, and this can't just happen. You know, for example, dolphins, they'll rest one part of their brain and then the other part of their brain at different times so they don't drown, because dumbasses decide to go live in the water when they breathe air. Plenty of air up here, buddy. Don't know how I got it for dolphins.
You really got it in for the dolphins, didn't you?
Oh, do I? No, so let's go through the stages of sleep, just really briefly. So there's stage one, non-REM sleep. REM standing for?
Rapid eye movement.
Good. REM sleep. Exactly. So that is this point where you sort of change from wakefulness to go sleepy times. That is stage one, non-REM sleep. So non-REM sleep is the time of sleeping where your eyes are not moving rapidly. We'll get on to what REM sleep is in a sec. But we've also done a bunch of episodes on sleep and dreams and whatnot. They'll be linked in places. Who knows? So, yeah, the changeover from sort of being awake to going to sleep in that period. It's not very long. It's only a few minutes. It's relatively light sleep. Your breathing, heartbeat, and eye movements all sort of slow down. You know, you're getting to a sort of slower state. And then you start sort of to relax, but there will be sort of twitches in your muscles. Now, I haven't double-checked this, but what I read when I was but a little boy was that these sort of twitches are your body kind of testing whether you're
asleep or not.
Well, because this is a way to apparently get into lucid dreaming, where you just lie very, very still, and then when your body sends out a jerk to sort of your leg or your arm or something, you just kind of ignore it, and your brain, a part of your brain, will start to be like, oh, I guess he's asleep because he didn't react to the twitch that I sent along. And then you can kind of get into a state of lucid dreaming. Lucid dreaming being the state where you can control your dreams. You know, you have agency in them almost.
This little twitchy zone, by the way, is something I have intimate experience of because my wife falls asleep much faster than me.
Oh my God.
So every night I just lie next to this thing that just has a little tiny, tiny little seizures. And I'm just like she'll like be hugging me, and she'll just go like, bleh. Her twitches are quite big as well.
I was gonna say, I feel like your wife would have a big twitch.
She's a big twitcher.
She seems like a big twitcher. She does.
Big twitch energy. So yeah, she just sort of wriggles around for a bit, and then I'm like, "You okay?" And she's already gone.
I'm so glad she doesn't listen to this podcast because I genuinely don't think I could look her in the eye like the number of times.
Knowing of her big twitch energy.
No, she just comes up a lot, always positive, but like this is so silly.
Sure.
Anyway, I'll not be sure to bring it up the next time we go to dinner. we then move on to stage two. Non-REM sleep. As you could maybe see here, the stages of sleep are broadly split into two categories. REM sleep and non-REM sleep. And I love that humans name things after something as simple as I go quick sleep.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So stage two non-REM sleep. That is a light sort of sleep before you're into a deeper, deep sleep. Again, everything starts to slow down even more. Heartbeat, breathing, your muscles, they start to really, really relax. Your body temperature then drops at that point, and your eye movement stops. So your eye movements are slowing down in stage one, non-REM sleep. And then in stage two, non-REM sleep, those suckers, they ain't moving. And then your brain waves sort of change as well. We've gone over this in another episode. Stage three... our non-REM sleep. That is such a mouthful. Stage three non-REM sleep. That's deep sleep. So you'd need that, or you will not wake up feeling like you've had a good old rest.
Yeah,
apparently.
I sometimes don't. So maybe I'm not getting deep enough.
Maybe you're not getting deep enough. That has always been a problem for you. I, on the other hand, it doesn't matter how long I last. Like, I may not last very long, but I get deep. I slept for an hour and a half and I woke up feeling amazing.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I genuinely woke
We're
up this morning.
We're talking about sleep now. Cool.
What else would you do in a bed?
Please continue.
So stage three non-REM sleep, we've gone through that. You're relaxed. It's hard to wake you up. Your brainwaves slow. Everything sort of really, really slows down. And again, this is the refreshing part of sleep. And then REM sleep, that's the heavy hitter. That's the one that everyone wants, right? That's in this first sort of 90 minutes after a falling sleep. Your eyes, you know what they do?
They do be rapid.
They rapidly move. Insane, I know. Should have put it in the name, but whoa, I'm not the guy that named it. Your brain waves then start to look more like waking brain waves.
Mm-hmm.
Your breathing is faster, more irregular. Heart rate, blood pressure, they all kind of go up to waking levels as well. And then a lot of dreams happen during this point. Not all of your dreams, bear in mind, but most of your dreams will happen during REM sleep. Your arms and legs are going to be paralyzed at this point, and that's why there's this thing called what, Luke?
Sleep paralysis.
Yes, where if you wake up, your arms and legs are paralyzed, you can't move, and you're like, oh no, there's something on my chest, because your breathing has slowed down a bit, and so you're getting less oxygen, and your brain is just like, oh my god, less oxygen, that means something's pressing down on me. What if someone's sitting on me? What if it's a demon? What if I can't move because a demon is holding me down? And then you're able to move again, and you're like, oh, I'm fine. Okay.
Or at least that's what the scientists want you to think, so you don't discover the aliens.
We're not that kind of podcast. We're not that kind of podcast.
But I'm that kind of guy.
Okay, so we've gone through all of these sorts of parts of sleep. I should mention as well, memory consolidation. So that's sort of like, how do I put this? Essentially backing up things into your sort of longer term memory, like taking all the things that happened in the day and like really just like kind of getting them nice and good in there.
And chucking stuff out, I assume, as well. Like
exactly.
Hippocampus stuff.
Yeah, all so that nonsense. Look, we've done...
That doesn't matter.
We've done episodes on sleep before. Go and watch those. If you want a deep sleep thing, we have those, okay? So those are the basic stages of sleep. We'll just quickly run through the recommended amount of sleep for different ages. What do you think the sort of trend is as we're going from, say, sort of newborns up to adults of 18 and over?
Well, it's definitely downward. The child sleeps more, and old people sleep significantly less.
Okay, so how many hours would you think, say, maybe a newborn from, you know, up to 1-year-old would need?
So I would think a newborn probably sleeps roughly the same amount as like a cat, so like 15 hours, something like that?
That's good, 12 to 16, usually.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's 15 and it's in there.
No, 15 is between 12 and 16.
Thank you
very
much.
Very good. Thank you, me. I didn't make maths, you know? I wasn't the guy that did it. That was like Isaac Newton or something. So then you've got kids from 1 to 2. They go down to about 11 to 14, including naps. And then kids from 3 to 5, 10 to 13, including naps as well. And then from 6 to 12, that's about 9 to 12 hours a day they need to sleep, which, to be honest, is shocking, right? You're a 6 to 12-year-old, right? And you're in school for 8 or 9 hours a day, right? And you need to sleep for 9 to 12 hours a day. Let's also take into account the fact that you've probably got an hour on either side of each day to get up, get ready, and get to school. Just say as a minimum, right? An hour to get up, get ready, get to school, then an hour to get home and like decompress and get unready from school, not even counting homework, right? So already school's taking up maybe like what, 10 to 11-ish hours a day?
Sorry, how long were your school days?
Are school days not 8
like
hours?
6.5?
I don't know how long school days, like, 9 till 4.
9 till 3:30.
Oh, 9 till 4 is like 7 hours. No.
So 9 to 4 is 7 hours.
So yeah. Okay. So
mine was like 9 to 3:30.
Okay. So 7 hours plus 2, like, you know,
yeah,
for the start.
Either
and
size.
So 9 hours, right? So school's taking up 9 hours of your day. You need to sleep 9 to 12. So already you've got.
That's 6 hours to go to the workhouse.
You've got homework as well. So that's only 5 hours for the workhouse.
Oh no! You can do the workhouse with one hand and the homework with the other hand.
Don't give them ideas.
Multitasking. Okay?
Don't give them ideas. No, so do you know what I mean? So then you've only got sort of 5-ish hours to yourself, but you've also got to eat. You've also got to do other things, maybe clubs and whatnot. Like, we're not, you know, we don't give kids enough sleep, which isn't really very good. Mm. You know, it's not great. That's what obviously why school days are probably shorter for younger kids, right? They're usually from 9 until 3?
Yeah.
3:15, 3:30? I don't know. It's been a while since I was in school. So, from 6 to 12 years old, that's 9 to 12 hours a day, as I said. Then teenagers, they need 8 to 10 hours a day, but they could actually need longer as well, apparently. Like, you know, teenagers need quite a bit of sleep. Why do you think, newborns up to teenagers need this much sleep?
Because they do be growing.
They do be
especially,
growing.
Like, and teenagers are, like, growing in a different way. Like, they're just, like, changing as
well,
not just growing bigger, they're just, like, metamorphosizing.
That's true. Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, newborns have got, like, their skulls are fusing together, they've got bones forming, and they are tacking on mass. Like, if you really think about this, it is insane that a baby doubles in weight in a, like, doubles its mass multiple times over such a short period, right? From the age of, like, newborn, like, I was, is it pounds? I was, like, eight or nine pounds or something. I was big, okay? I was a big, big baby, like, 8 or 9 pounds or whatever, right? I went from that to God, like
you went from that to God.
I went from that to God.
You've got a very high opinion of yourself.
Well, I'm God.
From an 8-pound baby to God.
Oh, if Jesus can do it, I can do it. Okay, I didn't get myself put up on a cross as well. Take that, buddy. Okay, I'm winning here. But do you know what I mean? Like, I went from that to, you know, easily like 50 kilograms as, like, you know, somewhere in my
teens
right? You know, and that's only like, let's say maybe like 12, 13, 14, 15 years, and you gain that much mass? That is insane. Like, you're eating and it's just becoming part of you? Mm-hmm. Wild. This is an episode about sleep deprivation, and yet I'm talking about babies growing, which is insane. We don't think about how crazy it is that babies grow. We've become too accustomed to it, okay? It's weird. And then adults need 7 to 8 hours a day, right? And people will say that, you know, oh, well, people can get used to lower amounts of sleep, but that's actually not super true. Mm. We do see that there are some issues with not getting the proper amounts of sleep. So if you're like me and you struggle to sleep, like, for example, you procrastinate it, like I did last night, I was very able to go to sleep and get a good 3 or 4 hours, and I stayed awake for an hour or two, not doing anything, just not really feeling the sleep. Very tired, but just like, not right now. It's not giving right now, you know? Is that what the kids are saying? I don't know. So
It's not giving sleep. Curry not being given sleep right now.
Okay, so that is sleep generally, and you know how much sort of sleep we need. And so if we talk about sort of sleep deficiency or sleep deprivation, that's obviously when you don't get enough sleep. Who do you think is at risk for sleep deficiency?
Oh, interesting. Okay. People who work shifts at nighttime.
Yes, very good.
Because there's medication you can be given to take. You can take the medication that's like, this is how, it's like a shift work disorder or something like that. Mm. So those people with insomnia.
Yeah.
Probably people with newborn children.
Yeah.
People with problems they're worrying about.
Anxiety. And literally what it says here is undiagnosed or untreated medical problems such as stress, anxiety, or sleep disorders. Yeah. Medications that interfere with sleep, all of these sorts of things. And people will say this, I just want to put this out there because I find it interesting. Ritalin is a stimulant that I take legally because a doctor said that I need it to be more like a normal person. And I agree. I love it. That is it. That's what being prescribed something is.
Yes. What's your point?
And my point is that it's a stimulant and you'd think that it would make it harder to sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, honestly, I didn't sleep well before Ritalin. Mm. And look, I still don't sleep great now sometimes, but I sleep so much better. Like, I sleep so much better, which doesn't make much sense sort of intuitively. Mm. But actually, I feel like you were telling me something. I mentioned this to you before. I think you were telling me something about this.
So maybe it is that like you're getting this spike of some kind of hormone, maybe it's like cortisol or something, later in the day, which means that you're more likely to be awake in the evening, and then you're going to struggle to get to sleep if you're trying to stick to a normal sort of workhouse set day schedule, which is what we're all still on from the Victorian times.
I mean, not us. I mean, as in not you and me specifically on that workhouse schedule. But yes, most people still are on that, which is insane.
Well, but I even just mean like adhering to 3 meals a day, get up early in the morning, go to sleep late at night, feeling guilty if you don't do those things. Like, we were still trained to do that in school, school years. That's still the basis of our lives. Like, we feel out of sync with society if we go to sleep at 5 in the morning.
Oh, dude, I went nocturnal during lockdown. Being self-employed and everyone working from home, I went nocturnal.
Really?
Yeah, I would wake up maybe in the afternoon. I'd have a nice big meal and I might have a nap later on in the evening. And then from sort of 10 p.m. would be my work hours. And I'd just smash through stuff. No one could bother me. No one could get in the way. I would have like a nice evening meal and chill and hang out. And so my day would start off essentially with a nice chill evening. And then I'd just smash through a bunch of work. And then I'd go to sleep and I'd wake up and have like a really nice chill evening. It's like being a morning person, but having all of the fun evening stuff that you
right.
do, you know?
Oh, nice.
And I just slipped into that accidentally. Like my sleep schedule's bad in that because I can get by through a day without sleeping very long, it's very easy for me to just shift my sleeping pattern. Like jet lag doesn't work on me, bro. Like it doesn't. I'll just adapt, you know?
Ding-a-ling-ling, this is the ad bell letting you know that the Sci Guys will be live in London at Jamboree near King's Cross on the 26th of September 2023 with a special guest, no less. There will be a live podcast, a quickfire quiz, a meet and greet, and a Q&A, and tickets are available now from sciguys.co.uk/tickets. You can get a 20% discount if you sign up for our Patreon as well. Okay, back to the show.
So yeah, let's get back to sleep deficiency. That's what we were talking about. So yeah, As we were saying, sort of if you've got a child, perhaps, or if you're a caregiver of any sort of sort, if you're on shift work, if you've got anxiety or other sort of things like that, if you're taking medication that, you know, keeps you awake, or, you know, if you're out all night drinking or using drugs or whatnot, all of these things can cause you to stay awake and miss out on sleep. And then you'd have sort of a sleep deficiency, or you'd be going through sleep deprivation. So shall we get into the sort of history of studying sleep deprivation? Before we really get into what sleep deprivation can do, I think it'd be more interesting to kind of look at where our knowledge on this came from.
I'm guessing someone was torturing someone else.
So,
was it the Nazis? Was it Guantanamo Bay?
It was a Russian lady, and as far as I'm aware, it was only dogs.
Oh.
That she kept awake.
Oh.
And don't worry, there were another couple of guys after her who did it to puppies instead.
That's much better.
Yes, it is. So, her name was Marie Domanatsina, but that doesn't sound very Russian, of course. That is not her only name. She has another Russian name. She goes by a number of names, but the name that I've just butchered is the one that was on the front of the big, long... I want to call it like a paper, but really it was a big old book that she wrote. And I didn't read it all. You can see it linked in the description. It's the Welcome Collection. They've got a PDF of it. It is a tome. It's a big boy. Okay. But she did a lot of sort of studies on sleep. She really pioneered these sort of sleep studies back in the late 1800s. So in 1894, she basically said that no sleep, so sort of total sleep deprivation, was fatal within a few days, and that there were issues with the brain. Specifically, there were lesions that could be found on the brain. And yeah, so it was puppies that she just kept. I think she basically kept them walking, moving around for a long time so that they couldn't go to sleep. And then they died after a few days. And yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
They died after a few days.
Yeah, I mean, constant walking. But obviously there are confounding factors here, right? So you've got your puppies awake by walking them around. What could be a confounding factor? Like, what could be killing these puppies other than not going to sleep?
I don't know. Like, thirst, exhaustion, hunger?
Exhaustion, yeah. So fatigue, basically.
Oh, like
from
physical exhaustion.
Physical
like the
exhaustion,
body gives
yeah.
up, right?
As in, because they're being active, right? Yeah. So it might not be the lack of sleep, but instead the constant activity that is killing them. We just could not know. And so in 1898, there were a couple Italians, Daddy and Tarozzi.
His name was Daddy.
It was his surname, D-A-D-D-I. Daddy.
Wow. That's
yes,
great.
Lamberto Daddy.
He should have been a porn star or something.
Lamberto Daddy. Yeah, absolutely. And Giulio Tarozzi. They kept dogs awake by walking them also, but they died after 9 to 17 days. And apparently, like, eating food didn't relate to their sort of survivability, right? So it wasn't down to not eating enough. So they sort of looked more closely at this, and they found, in the spinal ganglia, neurons of the spinal ganglia, there were sort of issues there. so they've kind of more pinpointed where there are some issues when you keep sort of a dog awake for days and days on end. And they did a few more sort of tests. They wanted to see what was going on more specifically. So I'm pretty sure they kept the dogs in a cage, a metallic cage, to stop them from being active, and kept them awake in different ways. So to basically get rid of the factor of whether or not it was the activity that was sort of killing them there. So the dogs survived about 2 weeks, roughly the same amount of time, you know, 9 to 17 days, 2 weeks, 14 days. So roughly the same amount of time as the active dogs, and the same changes in their brains, the same degeneration was observed. They could find the same issues there. And so basically, there were still some issues of, you know, whether sleep loss was specifically to blame or whether it was exhaustion or sensory stimulation, because to keep the dogs awake, you can either keep them active or like just keep them like, you know, keep them awake by shocking them with like sensory stimuli, right?
Out of interest, what is the difference you're drawing between sleep deprivation and exhaustion? Because I would have taken exhaustion to be like the physical toll on the body, but we're also using exhaustion when they're not moving.
Physical exhaustion. No. So, okay. So physical exhaustion as in exerting oneself to the point of death, right? Mm. That could be the case for walking, like basically walking puppies to death. Mm. If you're, that's how you're keeping them awake, right? If you put them in a cage, they're not walking anywhere. So it's like, okay, cool. We're not going to walk them anywhere. So we're going to keep them in a cage and we're just going to keep them awake by just blasting them with stimuli to keep them awake, right? Mm. And it's that overexposure to, you know, a sensory stimuli that could also be killing them, right? It could be, if we're being sort of scientific here and we're thinking about this, it could not be, it could be instead that, you know, it's not sleep loss that is killing these dogs. It could just be that, you know, overexertion, you know, like exhaustion, physical exhaustion from too much physical activity kills you in a similar way to overexposure to sensory stimuli kills you, right? That could conceivably cause the same outcome. We've not like at that point in the late 1800s, we hadn't specifically found that it was sleep loss that was doing this, right? Mm. Now we obviously had a pretty good idea, but we couldn't rule out other causes, absolutely. But, you know, these were the sort of first experiments to really try and figure out how sleep loss affected people, and specifically to also relate sleep and sleep loss to specific parts of the brain. And essentially, these also pointed out that sleep is important. Like not just important, but imperative, like you must sleep. These are sort of first experimental sort of, I guess, proof of sleep being necessary, despite the fact that obviously, you know, throughout human history we have come to that conclusion without empirical evidence.
Yeah, it's such a strange thing that we were just going around, like, so this is an experiment in the 1800s, right? We're studying like, well, what happens if we don't sleep? And until then, you just have these things about life that you just never question. It's like, I need to go to sleep in the 1500s, and you never go, what? Why? What am I doing? What is sleep? Why do I have to do it? And it takes like thousands and thousands of years of human evolution for someone to go,
Well, to be fair, probably toiling away as a serf, you don't have much time to think about, why am I doing this thing? You're like, gotta toil on the fields.
Ah, but there were some richies. Why were they not doing it? They were thinking about sleep.
The ones with anxiety became philosophers and the other ones... Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. Every single philosopher was neurodivergent or mentally ill. Prove me wrong. Prove it. You can't do it. That's not a position I actually hold.
No.
But I think I've kind of convinced myself of it, actually.
I mean, maybe they're overrepresented.
I would say so.
Neurodivergent or depressed.
Not necessarily just depressed.
Okay.
Any clinical, you know, mental health issue.
They'll do.
They'll have anyone.
We're take your pick.
A big old barn. You won't have anxiety, huh? Go ahead. No, so yeah, I mean, we started to really get to the roots of this in the late 1800s. That would be 1897, 1899 sort of time. So by basically just keeping puppies awake. And we're going to skip way, 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 way into the future, way past the 1800s to the 1900s, specifically 1959, otherwise known as 1959.
Colloquially.
Yeah, you know, to the plebeians. So have you heard of Peter Tripp?
Was he be tripping from sleep exhaustion? I think I've heard the name, but I can't remember why. So there is a guy I know who, like, just kept himself awake.
Yes.
To see what would happen.
Well, yeah, okay, yes. Do you know anything more about the story?
To keep himself up, it was either to see what would happen or because he wanted to hallucinate. I can't remember which way round.
It was neither of those things. So Peter Tripp was born 11th of June, 1926. He did the top 40 countdown for Kansas City's WHB and later at New York City's WMGM in 1955, I believe. And then 1959, decided to host a wake-a-thon for charity and to break a world record. So the plan was to stay awake for 200 hours, which is how many days, roughly? Over how many days, roughly?
Over 8 days.
That is correct. It is over 8 days. Yep. Yeah. Days are 24 hours. I don't know why I looked there. Days are 24 hours.
Excuse me, define days.
Days?
In hours.
24. Oh, wait, hold on. Wait, no, I'm talking about like a day or... Shut up, Luke.
Alfie days.
Wasn't expecting that. So the wake-a-thon was in 1959, staying awake for over 200 hours, as I said. Well, 200 hours, actually. And a lot of this was done in a glass box in Times Square. simpler times.
Like one of those, what's that guy who does like horrible experiment? David something.
Oh, David, not Fincher. I like him.
No,
David Blaine.
David Blaine, David like Blaine, a David Blaine
is
experiment.
Is that Mind Freak?
Where he's like trying to get out of something and he's trying to freak people out, but it's secretly a trick.
Yeah, it's what?
He's not a magician. He's not magic.
What? He's a fake magician? Insane.
And wait till I break your heart and tell you that there's no such thing as a real magician.
Oh, good God. Oh, no. Let's just go on. So he was in a glass box in Times Square, entirely on air, by the way. So he was on the radio this entire time, which I'm going to be honest with you, right? I've done Sci Guys after basically no sleep. I don't think I could do Sci Guys after, like, a third day, you know, two nights of not sleeping.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want the people to see me like that. You know?
We used to record Sci Guys across a weekend sometimes, when we needed to catch up. And that was 2 days in a row, but we had breaks and we had sleep.
Mm.
And he was doing that times four, and there were no breaks and there was no sleep.
Yeah.
Was he okay? Was he making a lot of money?
Well, we'll get to it. So he had doctors and psychologists watching him. Basically, they were like, don't do this. It's stupid. And he was like, I'm not doing it anyway. And they were like, we'll watch you, I guess, to make sure you don't die. But also, this is going to be an interesting experiment because, you know, it's the 50s. You can't really just keep someone awake for 8 days unless they're black or Hispanic or, I don't know, maybe Jewish or disabled mentally or physically. Or... poor, really poor. Yeah, you know, all of those.
Other than that.
It's
not allowed.
No, you're not allowed to do it to someone like Peter Tripp, you know, a white man. Anyway.
White man. Rich, famous white man.
So he actually ended up staying awake for over 200 hours, or 201 hours to be exact. So let's just run you through what exactly happened here. So on the second day, he started to get irritable, which, of course, I mean, you know, after 2 days with no sleep, you're going to be a bit grouchy, you know. His body temperature lowered as well. Apparently, he started swearing at people. Swearing at
on
people
the radio.
Yeah, well, he was on the radio, but he was swearing at people that he knew. He was like, no. Which is it wasn't his usual sort of disposition, right? And then after 5 days, he started to hallucinate. He would see people that weren't there, cobwebs on people's faces, apparently. I can't find a lot of really great information on this. I've got a few resources linked down below, but it's pretty limited, you know, and a lot of it, you know, after, you know, 60 odd years has kind of been a little bit sensationalized. So it's really hard to dig down into what actually happened. So what I'm saying here is what I'm pretty sure actually happened. You know, I'm getting rid of all the other stuff. So, you know, second day, irritable, swearing at people, understandable, right? We've all, I'm sure, like all of us have probably pulled an all-nighter at least some point in our lives. And, you know, even if you can last with no sleep, an all-nighter is a completely different situation. It's just rough, you know, it's just hard.
I've done that, and then I felt like I was seeing spiders out the corner of my eye.
Good
just
God.
In the periphery, I'm like, oh, a spider, and then I look and it's another.
Yeah, I have been tired enough to vaguely hallucinate. That's when I know I got to sleep. I'm like, oh, my brain is making things up. Yep, time to go night-night. So after 5 days hallucinations, as we said, cobwebs on faces, random people that aren't there. After the experiment, he slept for about 13 to 22 hours, depending on who you ask.
Wow.
No, right? 22 hours. Almost an entire day.
Probably the best sleep of his life as well.
Well, it wasn't, though. It was still kind of disturbed. I mean, it was a deep sleep, but it was still kind of a disturbed, not great sleep.
Mm.
Apparently, after the first few days would be sort of worst in getting back to some semblance of normalcy.
Mm.
And your sleep would be kind of disturbed because you've not slept for 8 whole days, which is insane. That is like
some parts of you
that.
Might be trying to wake up because they think it's the daytime, and other parts of you are exhausted, so they're trying to stay asleep.
Exactly. So you're just all over the place. Your body, like, you've really thrown yourself out of rhythm, right?
Yeah.
Because you need to sleep pretty much every night, and if you miss it, it's not just like you can catch up the next
day. I heard that you can't catch up on sleep. It's like you've done some damage to your body. You can't sleep more and undo the damage.
Yeah, I mean, you can. It's in a sense that you can't just sleep more and that's it, fine.
Yeah.
You will probably need to sleep more, but you've still missed that sleep. It's not, although saying that you've done sort of irreparable damage. I don't know how true that is.
Yeah. I think the main point is, like, you can't sleep for 16 hours every 2 days.
Yeah,
it's not exactly the same thing.
No, that's the kind of the point that I think people are trying to make, that you can't be like, oh, well, what if I just, you know, what if I just clump all my sleep together into like a big... No, that's not really going to work. So afterwards, he slept, as I said, for quite some time. And then he lost his job at the radio station. Why do you think he was fired?
Was he saying rude, sweary things about the CEO when he was on air?
No, that wasn't it. No. I mean, so you're kind of going down the route of, I guess, the sleep of having affected his job in some way. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Well, not anymore. because there was some kind of legal challenge.
He was fired because he took $36,050 in bribes before the experiment.
From who?
I don't know. I literally have no clue.
For what reason?
Look, I laughed at it, bribes.
So
I thought,
just
that's
entirely
funny.
Unrelated. He took bribes.
Took bribes. $36,000 in 1950s money, which
is a lot of money.
A lot more money now. That's not just 36 grand. That's quite a bit more. Mm. Look up inflation. It's crazy. Yeah, so,
especially right now.
What? What?
Last week, £36,000 could be a deposit in our house. Next week, maybe a month's rent.
Maybe, if you're lucky. In New York, you'd get 10 minutes for a box. Anyway, so he took 36 grand in bribes, and people say that he, you know, lost his job because of psychosis and permanent changes. He also, four of his marriages, all four of them, ended in divorce.
People at the same time?
Well, you see, Luke, the thing about that is, no, he wasn't, what is it?
Bigamist. I learned that word from The Simpsons, by the way.
Really? I learned it from Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, I would have thought you'd learn it from The Simpsons.
I learned some things from other places, though. No, so he wasn't a bigamist, to my knowledge, but all four of his marriages ended in divorce. People say that it's because of, you know, psychological changes, permanent sort of lasting psychosis. No evidence for that, actually. Really little evidence for it. And as I said, a lot of this stuff, because it was a really sort of crazy experiment and it was very well publicized, obviously people are going to be making up stories about it, and so things kind of get away from the truth over time. But yeah, as far as I'm aware, there weren't any lasting effects until he died of an apparent stroke.
Oh.
When he was 73 in the year 2000, about 41 years after the experiment. Unrelated, I imagine. Yeah, so he stayed awake for 8 hours. He stayed awake for 8 days straight, 201 hours, over 8 days straight, and didn't seem to have any lasting psychological or physical effects. Lived to be, you know, a relatively
an old
right
age.
Yeah, 70, yeah. 73, that's fine. That's a fine number of years to live, I think. Apparently, he was kind of fine after. I mean, I've heard this story before, and the story I heard is the man died. You know, he stayed awake for so long, he went insane.
That sounds like something your parent would tell you when they want you to go to sleep. Have you ever heard of Peter Tripp? He stayed awake for 8 days and he died. Now go to sleep, you little brat.
See, if you told me that, I'd be like, well, I'll stay awake for 7 then.
Yeah, okay, because you're a pedantic little, like I said, brat.
I feel like 8 days is that's a wide margin. I'm trying to stay up an extra couple hours, and if you're pulling out a guy that stayed awake for 8 days, that's like, oh, are you going to take an extra cookie from the cupboard?
Yeah.
Well, this person stole $1 million and was shot into space. Don't think it applies to me. And I don't think it does. That's all I'm saying.
This is exactly the kind of response I would expect from baby Corey.
Yeah, look, imagine what your kid is going to be like, okay? Much worse. Much, much, much worse. Wait till they get to the Y stage, because you're still not out of it, I'm afraid.
That's why I'm on the podcast.
So, yeah, apparently there weren't any lasting effects in this one instance of sleep deprivation, but it can kill you, as we've seen, right?
Mm.
So why don't we get into
Well, it that. Can kill dogs.
Well, that's true. It can kill dogs, but I'm pretty sure it also can kill people. We've got evidence of people staying awake to the point of dying. Like, bear in mind, he was hallucinating, and he was not well. He was very not well at the end of those 8 days. I mean, he basically completely lost it. It took him, he recovered over the next few days, you know, it took him a little bit to recover, but yeah, this isn't a case of like, oh, you can stay up for 8 hours and it's totally 8 days and it's totally fine. Don't ever do that. Don't ever do that. This one guy was fine. I don't think we have, like, this was a world record. I don't think we've got sort of recorded data on what happens when, you know, a number of people stay up for days and days and days at a time, right? Mm. Like, it's actually, it's literally a torture method, right? You know that torture method where
they drip a little thing on your forehead.
A little water on you.
Like, just a little blub.
And it keeps you awake.
Yeah, I think that's a Guantanamo Bay thing.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, they're very good at torturing, aren't they?
They are. I'm guessing that this is too long ago for us to have audio recordings of this guy slowly descending into madness on the radio.
No, I'm pretty sure we still have them.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to look them up when I get.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, there's a video link down below. I mean, the issue was that when I searched this guy, I found his obituary, and it barely mentioned the Wake-a-thon. Like, the man was genuinely famous outside of this. You know, he was a radio host in Kansas and then New York, you know. Like, he was a thing in his own right, and the Wake-a-thon is just like a little interesting thing that he did, you know, barely mentioned, as I said, in his obituary.
I'm amazed that someone hasn't broken this record like on a Twitch stream.
I think someone has.
Okay, right. I was going to say, because this is such ripe like space for a I'm trying to break the world record Twitch stream.
So the world record is 11 days and 24 minutes.
Oh my God.
A 17-year-old in 1963 to 64 stayed awake for 11 days and 24 minutes, 264.4 hours. And that the previous record was 260 hours. So a Stanford sleep researcher was there. You know, we can probably get into these studies more, you know, in another episode or whatever. I just kind of wanted to, there are some other studies I really want to look at that are more actual experiments than these sorts of things, right? But yeah, I mean, we do know that sort of, you know, staying awake for extended periods of time is not good. Even this, you know, this guy that the person that stayed, I think it's a guy. Is it a guy? Who knows? Yes, a man, an American man, Randy Gardner. So he the one that stayed awake for, you know, the current world record time after, I think it was after 10 days. On the 11th day, he was asked to subtract 7 repeatedly. So start with 100. Just take 7 off. And apparently he stopped at 65. And then he stopped at 65. They asked him why. He was like, forgot what I was doing.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No working memory left anymore.
No, exactly, right? I mean, you've probably experienced this if you've stayed awake for an extended period of time. Like, I mean, I did a SciGuys episode, you know, a little while back. See if you can find it. Did a couple of SciGuys episodes, having slept maybe about an hour, 2 hours-ish, and having slept very little the night before as well, which I can do a SciGuys day on a couple hours, right? No bother. You will probably not notice. That day, I was watching the episode back and I was like, I got a lot of ums to cut out. I could barely string a sentence together. I swear to God, honestly.
It's a good job the NHS gives you free speed. Well, cheap speed, sorry.
I'm not going to lie. That Ritalin was getting me through that day.
Yeah.
when it wore off, I was like, oh, there goes me and all of my energy. But yeah, staying awake for extended periods of time is bad. Don't do it. But yeah, I mean, the person, I think he recovered. Yeah, apparently he recovered pretty much fully, other than having serious insomnia decades after the experiment, apparently. But again, you know, there's not a huge amount of data on, you know, what happens to people when they stay awake for long periods of time.
I like the idea that the serious insomnia decades later was his body going, let's break the record again.
Got a taste of it. Got a taste.
It was so good last time.
Yeah. But no, I mean, look, staying awake can, like, for extended periods of time can kill you. I mean, if we look at those dogs, they were dying between, I think, 12 and 17-ish days.
So the real world record is held by the dogs.
They died.
Yeah, but they still win.
They weren't attended by an official world record, a blah, blah, blah person. But no, my point is that it seems, if, you know, if there is a sort of lethal, it seems there is a sort of lethal point of staying awake. Mm. It's just that there aren't, I mean, there are people who have probably died from staying awake for extended periods. I mean, there are torture, all that sort of stuff, right? But I from a quick sort of skim, I couldn't find any sort of massive cases of people staying awake so long for an experiment that they died, because that would be inhumane.
So how long until the Mr. Beast video, last one to fall asleep, wins $1 billion?
Don't give him any
ideas. I mean...
Are you sure it's not already happened? Mr. Beast, last to sleep. I swear to God. How much did you say?
Well, I said $1 billion, but I'll say $1 million.
$1,000.
What?
Oh, wait, no. Version of Mr. Beast. Oh no. Last fall asleep wins $10,000. Nope, these are just Mr. Beast. These are just Mr. Beast impersonators.
Oh.
Mr. Beast is definitely doing good things.
How many views have they got? Someone tell Jimmy.
No. No. Don't, let's not encourage this.
Evan talks to him sometimes. I'll tell him.
Not even going to question that further. I'm just going to barrel on through and don't.
I'm going to get this idea to Mr. Beast.
Luke, yeah. You will be responsible for children dying.
No, they won't be children. They'll be consenting adults.
And the children who then copy that on their own YouTube channels.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I won't tell Mr. Beast to do that then.
Good.
He'll just come up with himself, and then it's not my problem.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
I think it is, but it's rather quiet this time.
Well, Luke, we want to keep a big old secret about this SciGuys merch.
Yes, please do not tell anybody, and do not purchase any of it. Otherwise, people will find out.
They might see you wearing our merch or displaying our merch and think, oh wow, what a cool person. And I'll tell you this, as a cool person myself, having people think you're a cool person can be very, very stressful.
Yeah, we can't have that. And we also can't have you supporting the show to exist that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah, so absolutely, under no circumstances should you go to normalcitizen.store and pick up some SciGuys merch. Some SciGuys merch like beanies and posters and t-shirts and calendars and cool stuff like that. Definitely don't go to that store and buy that.
Goodness me, that's an awful lot of stuff that I'm not going to purchase.
Absolutely, Luke. Now let's get back to the show before anyone listens to us.
God, I really hope we got away with that one.
So, how sleep deprivation kills. We know that sleep deprivation can kill, at least in dogs and some other things, like fruit flies, rats. So we wanted to figure out how, you know, sleep deprivation actually ended up killing people. So in this 1989 study called Sleep Deprivation in the Rat, number 3, Total Sleep Deprivation. This was in a series of sleep deprivation experiments in rats, as you could probably tell from the title of that lovely paper there. As I said, 1989, it was in the journal Sleep. So it proved that sleep deprivation itself actually kills and not something else. And it's not a very long paper. It's only about 9 or so pages, and it's well worth a read if you're interested. The other ones are available. They're all linked down below, and they're worth reading through as well. They're not super complex language. I mean, stuff that is a bit complex, you can skip through, you can get the gist of it. It's all good. But yeah, so basically what went on here is they had rats, right? Baseline, we've got rats, and they had this sort of disc apparatus, they call it. Essentially, for sort of total sleep deprivation, what they would do is they'd have these rats on the disc. The disc was above water, right?
Okay.
Right. The disc was above water, and there was food and drinking water sort of in the middle. The disc was attached to a motor, and the rats were attached to polygraphs. And so the disc would start to spin when the polygraph registered that the rat's brain waves were getting to the no-no zone of, you know, whatever sort of sleep stage they didn't want them to get to. So they did a few different experiments on this. This one we're looking at here is total sleep deprivation, but they had different levels of this, right? So if the rat's brain waves got to the point where they were like, you're falling asleep, the disc would start to spin. And if the disc that they're on spins, it's a little disc, it's only got enough space for like the rats and a little bit of food and water, right? If the disc they're on spins, there is sort of these, how do I put this? It would basically sort of put them into the water, right? Because there's a plexiglass case over the disc, and food and water sort of in the center, right? So if the disc starts to spin and the rat doesn't move, the rat's going to go into the water,
mm-hmm.
right? And the idea behind this is that essentially, if the disc starts moving, the rat has to wake up and start moving, and
yeah,
so as to not fall into the water, because it doesn't want to fall into the water, right? And that means that it will then be awake, so the rat's going to be kept awake for however long you want to keep it awake for, without having to subject it to, you know, a lot of sort of stimulus that will wake it up, or to, you know, a lot of physical activity either, right? So we can rule out both exhaustion from overexertion, and we can also rule out overactive stimulation, you know, killing them as well.
Yep.
And gosh, this is a truly kind of horrid experiment. As I said, there were two rats there, right, on this disc, separated from each other, and they would just spin it when the rat started to get tired for 6 seconds once the rat's brainwaves changed out of the no-no zone, they'd keep it spinning for 6 further seconds, so they knew it was stable, and then they would stop, right? So essentially all this is if the rat starts to fall asleep, disc spins, rat has to walk to wake up, and it stops after a little bit once they're sure the rat's awake.
You know those stories where people are like, I woke up in the night and I was abducted by aliens and they probed me?
Yeah.
That's... The stories are true. It's just, we're the aliens. Like, that's really, truly, that's the kind of thing you'd have in a weird film where aliens abduct someone. Like, that's just, but it's just a rat and it's not a person. That's, imagine you're just a rat bopping around your life. You were born in some kind of farm and then a hand comes in and you're put on a disc and you're not allowed to sleep and you fall into water and you don't understand why. And then you probably die from the experiment, or you are killed because they can't be able to look after the rats. Where do rats go if they survive the experiments? Is there like a nice little heaven they go to?
If you mean the same waste bin as the other rats.
What, they put a live bit rat in a bin?
They kill it first.
Why?
They want to look after the rats.
Well, that was my point.
But... sometimes they put them in... I think you can sometimes put a used rat into another experiment. But it's...
Yeah, you're not so controlling for things there, are you?
Well, look, they last 2 years and they're easy to breed. They do it like that. Like, they do it very quickly. What's the point? Just get a new rat. Consumerism, but for rats. Look, I love rats. I had rats of my own. We have them cremated in ridiculously expensive boxes. Like, and I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that because it was the dumbest thing we could have ever done.
Because it's a rat.
Well, no, it's fine. One of them died and we were like, we need to honor him. Metal placard. Nice wooden box. Cremated, right? £100 or whatever. Then a second rat died, you know, a few months later, and we're like, oh Christ, after all the vet bills of trying to keep him alive, and then the vet bills for putting him down, and now to pay to put him in a nice box. Wow, we got another rat after this to pay for as well. So we realized that we ended up actually spending about £30 to get the rats themselves. That's how much they cost altogether. All three rats cost £30. Cremating them and putting them in the boxes cost like 300.
So that's 10 rats.
Yeah.
That's 10 rats.
It was a bad decision. It was, look, I'd make the same decision again, but like next round of rats, they can get buried in a garden. That's fine.
Matchbox. Shoebox.
Bit big for a matchbox, but yeah, shoebox. They fit comfortably in a shoebox because I took a dead one in a shoebox to the vet to get cremated. Anyway. Enough about rat death. But yeah, no, rats are often killed at the end of experiments. The way we treat them is truly horrible. There are some, I think in cases where we literally have no other option, yeah, we kind of need to do studies on animals like this. It's a really difficult moral sort of quandary, I think, right? Because it does benefit not just us, but, you know, it can benefit rats as well to know more about their biology. It can benefit us to know more about their biology and all that sort of thing. But it does
require...
We're
doing it for you. Say as I put you in the incinerator or throw you in the bin.
No, fancy rats, not lab rats. No, they're a different class of rats.
Oh, okay.
This is the same as the 1950s with, you know, the black people and the Hispanics and the Latinos. Because they're
right,
different.
So the fancy rats are the whites.
Which is ironic because lab rats are often white, right?
Ah,
it's turned it on its head. Oh, it's like one of those.
It's like Noughts and Crosses or whatever that TV show is called.
It's like some dystopian novel where it's being all edgy. It's like, ooh, the white people are actually... How does it feel to be oppressed, Luke? Oppressed for your race? I wouldn't know that feeling myself.
I don't know how to respond to that question, Gary.
There's no right answer. No, so getting back to this disc experiment. So the TSD, total sleep deprivation rats, they basically just kept them awake until they died, or until they were like, let's kill them, because they've reached the point of no return. They've reached the point of usefulness for us. They've gone past their usefulness. May as well just kill them.
They're
right?
Never getting over this. They won't forgive us. We better put them down.
No, they won't. Rats are smart. I feel like they'd band together and like kill them scientists.
We better hope that Simpsons episode where the dolphins come out the sea doesn't happen with the rats, because they are not going to forgive us.
I mean, you've seen what the killer whales, who are actually dolphins, yes, I know, are doing now, right? They're destroying ships, which, I mean, I'm on the side of the orcas, right?
Yeah. But there's also orcas that bring your phone back when you drop it in the sea.
That's because they're okay. That's if you're nice. I feel like if you're nice. I was gonna say, I feel like if you're nice to orcas, they'll be nice to you.
Not if you fall in.
That's more crows, right? If you're nice to a crow, bunch of crows will be nice to you. They're sound, right? Orcas are a bit too much like people, wherein you could be nice to an orca, and if it's having a bad day, still gonna kill you.
They take advantage of you.
Yeah, I would not trust an orca. Like, someone was telling a story, I think, where they followed an orca and it turned out it was a baby that was taking it to its mother that was trapped in sort of fishing wire, and they cut the orca free, and it was fine, it saw a way, it thanked them sort of thing, and then some came back and they sang to them and they did some like flippy things and were like, oh, thank you, you know, in sort of orca language, I guess.
That's amazing.
But someone else, I think, told a story similar to that, or jumped off of that, being like, yeah, this is also like kind, not exactly a hunting tactic, but orcas would do that to kill you.
Like a mermaid. They're like luring you in.
I think orcas are smarter than people give them credit for. And they're smart enough to, like, how do I put this? They're smart enough to kill animals for fun. They hunt for sport. Like, they just do it for a laugh, honestly.
Imagine if when people went fox hunting, they like helped a fox and then put on a little performance for the fox and then like killed the fox.
I mean, people do that to people, I guess. I don't know. My point is just that, if the sort of Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episode were to come true, it wouldn't be the dolphins I'd be as worried about as much as the orcas. Because dolphins are about as bad as orcas. But orcas got, they're, I think they're more organized. And their teeth are like bigger.
And they look cuter as well. So you don't suspect
them. Dolphin, I feel like if you look at a dolphin properly, you're like, you are a horrifying freak of nature.
Oh, yeah.
An orca is just a big blob. A big black and white blob. So cute. Love it. Anyway, we're getting so off topic.
Dolphins have got great PR.
Dolphins PR is like, I'm a shark man, okay? Right, look, I'll put it out there, right? Dolphins, absolute arseholes, right? They're just the worst. They look them up. They do horrid things. That woman that got into a relationship with the dolphin, I don't think the dolphin was being taken advantage of here. I think the woman was being taken advantage of. That dolphin knew, it was our pilot episode, you could go check out on our Patreon, that dolphin knew that if he, told the lady in dolphin language, I'm not going to try and learn to speak English unless you, before I do it.
For the listeners, what did you just do?
I did a hand motion with a noise alongside it. You can figure out what the dolphin's asking the lady to do. This is all, if you're not understanding this, by the way, there was a lady that tried to teach dolphin English, and then she entered into a sexual relationship with a dolphin. And my point is that I don't think that it was the lady's fault so much as it was the dolphin's fault. Anyway, moving past that, dolphins, great PR. They suck. Sharks, horrible PR. They're great. If a shark bites you, it's because it's confused and they think people taste bad and so they don't want to eat people. Like, sharks just think, like, they don't see very good and they bite things to figure out what they are and they're like, oh, is that a seal that I want to eat? No, it's disgusting. Oh, it's hitting me. Bye. Sharks are cool. Leave sharks alone. Let them live. Dolphins? Stay away from them. They'll be mean to you.
If this was your first episode of Sci Guys, then welcome. There's plenty more where this came from.
Yeah, this is it, isn't it? People pay us to let me rant about dolphin sex with humans. Moving on, back to the rats that can't sleep. That's what we were talking about. So what they found was that the death seemed imminent within 11 to 32 days. So all of the rats that were undergoing total sleep deprivation died, and I'm going to read this verbatim, or were sacrificed when death seemed imminent.
Sacrificed.
That is the word that they use in the abstract of this paper. I am not joking. All TSD rats died or were sacrificed when death seemed imminent within 11 to 32 days. They couldn't find any, it says here, no anatomical death, cause of death was identified. What that means is they couldn't look in their body and be like, this is exactly
the heart failed.
Yeah,
or,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And, they had lesions on their tails and paws. They had weight loss. And that's even, you may be like, oh, maybe they stopped eating. No, they were eating more, right? And so that would sort of imply that there's a greater energy expenditure. Bear in mind as well, body temperature will drop as well after that sort of length of
either energy expenditure or the body's not digesting properly.
Bingo! Right, so there you go, exactly. So dehydration, by the way, they had control rats, obviously. They were all healthy, right?
What did they do with the control rats? Just have them, were they on a spinning disc as well, but they didn't fall in?
Yeah, I think they had them on a disc, but they had it so that they couldn't fall in, but they still had it, they let them rest, but it still moved occasionally. I did read this and I did understand it. And now I'm in a hot room and you put me on the spot. It's a 9-page paper. Go and read it yourself. I'm not going to baby you forever, okay?
I'm just fascinated by the idea that you've thought of, you've designed your main experiment and you go, okay, what is the control here? Right. We've got a spinning disc. Do we need to have a spinning disc for the control? I suppose we do. It kind of has to move sometimes, but maybe not when it's to do with sleep. But not enough that the rat can't not sleep. That's the control. Yeah, fascinating. Yeah,
it's a lot, right? It's ridiculous. So that's sort of what was going on there with the experiment. You know, they killed a bunch of rats. They were getting ill, it seemed. The control rats were pretty healthy. There wasn't any dehydration, right? They ruled out dehydration.
Because they're constantly falling into water.
No, they weren't necessarily falling into water. That's the whole point. They had to walk. Oh, the disc wasn't forcing them into the water, they had to wake up so as to not fall into the water.
Yes.
Right? So it wasn't that they were... In fact, they actually left the rats... They gave the rats some time to acclimatize to their new constant hell. Tell me I'm wrong.
No.
Exactly. So they gave the rats some time to acclimatize.
I just like the idea that you can acclimatize to hell.
Well, look, if you've got eternity, it's fine. No, so they were, you know, they put them on the disc and they gave them some time. The rats, I think, rarely started to fall into the water because they're rats. They're pretty bloody good at not falling unless they're one of my rats in the cage and getting himself paralyzed and then getting himself fine after we take him to the very expensive vet. A rat fell in the cage and he paralyzed his back legs and we were like, oh no, we've got a disabled rat. Redid the entire cage, got him an emergency vet at the Royal Veterinary College in London, in Camden. And by the time we got him there, he was starting to walk again.
Yeah, don't worry, that was clear. You made that clear.
Good. I'm still mad at him, even though he's been dead for over a year.
Which box did he get? The fancy box or the less fancy box?
They all got the fanciest box.
Oh, God.
And Alfie was the first to go, if I'm honest. So he was the first one to get the fancy box. They let the rats acclimatize. So they weren't always falling into the water. They knew what was going on, right? They weren't falling into the water constantly. They knew they had to move to not fall into the water because they didn't want to do that, obviously. So they weren't dehydrated. They've actually ruled out lack of nutrient absorption there. It was accelerated use rather than failure to absorb, it says there explicitly. And they also, so the food weight changes in TSD rats were attributed to increased energy expenditure. And so they measured energy expenditure, obviously, on the caloric value of food, weight, and wastes. So basically... This is something that bugs me, right? We did this in an episode, I think, on obesity or something, wherein I spoke about the laws of thermodynamics, in that you can't gain weight without having an excess of energy. Mm-hmm. And people took issue with that. And what I mean by that is very, very simply that if you do not have energy coming, if you've not got like more energy coming into your body than you are expending in your body, that you cannot, there's no way for you to gain mass. You would be pulling mass out of nowhere if the input output wasn't matching up. Yes, there are things that can affect how much sort of fat you sort of produce and all of these sorts of things, but at the most fundamental level, you can't gain mass without taking in mass. And so this is it's a sort of easier way to sort of figure this out. You look at the calories in the food, the weight of the rat, and the weight of the wastes, right? And you get an idea of a rough idea of energy expenditure from that. And that showed that the energy expenditure increased actually more than double their baseline values, which is insane. Like doubling your energy expenditure? That's mad, right? So that's the sort of overview. This was in a series. So the previous study was published in 1983. The one I'm talking about now was published in 1989. But in the previous study, they found that total sleep deprivation resulted in death, along with like a bunch of other symptoms, kind of the ones I listed there, lesions, along with like behavioral symptoms and all of that sort of nonsense. And that study, the 1983 study, is linked below as well. And they used the same setup in this study with the spinning discs. And the idea behind doing it again was not just to torture rats. It was to figure out, more information on what's actually causing the deaths and also trying to replicate the results. So they'd already shown in a previous experiment that, total sleep deprivation is 100% what is killing these little rats. Let's do it again, but better. So And I've already explained the sort of whole disc thing to you. I'll just quickly recap. The rats were on a spinning disc suspended above water. There was a plexiglass cage above the disc. And the rats were also connected to a little polygraph, so that it could sense a little brainwaves and write down on a little bit of paper. And whenever they had no brainwaves, they're falling asleep. Disc spins. Rats have to move to not fall into the water. They would wake up, walk opposite to the disc rotation to avoid being taken into the water. After about 6 seconds out of the forbidden, no-no zone, the rotation stopped. And the results, so they said, at sacrifice or death, the 9 rats showed the following signs. They were all extremely debilitated, of course. I'm not exactly sure what this means. I thought it was interesting, but I didn't look into it. I didn't have the time. Formally rated rats had ratings of 5.5 or 6 on the 1-6 appearance rating scale. Which...
they were not hot anymore. These rats are not hot. Get some sleep.
I love that the sexy rat scale goes from 1 to 6.
Six being a sexy rat.
No, 6 being sick rat, not sexy.
Sexy rat, okay.
So these rats were not looking good. In their last 24 hours, it says that 7 rats showed temperature declines to more than 3 standard deviations below their individual baseline means. That's a lot. They moved down quite, they measurably, their body temperature dropped. The other 2 rats of the 9 showed declines of more than 2 standard deviations. So, not quite as much, but still drops below. They all had edema of the paws. So they also had their peak food intake apparently also decreased. 7 had motor weakness. Only 2 had notable declines in waking EEG amplitude. So their brain waves declined whilst they were awake. That only happened in 2 of them out of the 9. But apparently the number of disc rotations required to keep them awake when they were almost dead, it's a near terminal TSD, it declined. Right. So they were less when they were getting closer and closer to death, they were falling asleep less, basically, is what that shows. This might partially reflect an inability to generate high amplitude EEG activity. Their brainwaves just ain't working right. Mm. Right. And none of the other rats showed the control rats. None of the control rats showed any of those signs or any indication that they couldn't have continued to live under the same conditions, right? So the rats that weren't being kept awake constantly,
still very sexy,
they were fine. They were like, oh, I don't know what's going on with these guys, I'm all good. It's because you're getting your beauty sleep, and so beauty sleep is very clearly kind
you
of a thing.
Stay a 1 and not become a 6. Get your beauty sleep.
Exactly. If we talk about recovery, so there were 10 total sleep deprivation rats. One of them actually, I think, died. One died kind of not accidentally, but just it didn't die in the right way. So they kind of removed it a little bit from the results. You can see the specifics if you go and look at the actual study, but just know that they had 10 rats and we're only really looking at 9 rats for sort of a lot of this. But of those 10 rats, 7 of them, they just sacrificed because they were like, yeah, you're gonna die, and I just don't feel good about this.
Please don't make me continue.
They were like, okay, well, I'm just gonna euthanize these rats.
You may finish the experiment, but first you must kill the rat, and then you can stop the experiment.
I mean, it's almost like a mercy killing at that point. I mean, you put them in the position, so how much mercy have you got? But you know what I mean. So one of them died after 11 days of deprivation, which was insane. So they wanted to try and evaluate recovery in one of the rats. So basically, okay, we've kept you awake almost to the point of no return, and then we're just going to let you sleep again and see what happens. But they accidentally let it pass the point of no return.
Oh.
So
the eternal sleep.
Yeah. So 22 days they kept it awake, this little rat. Yeah. And it was only sleeping sporadically and then died 64 hours later.
Oh, man.
So over 3 weeks it stayed awake and then it just couldn't get back to normal sleep and it just died from sleep deprivation.
Rest in peace.
bloody hope so. So, no, and so, you know, that was counted apparently as a TSD death, total sleep deprivation death, with survival time of 22 days, which was the point that it would have been sacrificed. It would have been like euthanized, basically. I don't know why they keep on saying sacrifice. It keeps on throwing me off. It was the point it would have been euthanized.
Because normally sacrifices to a cause.
Right, exactly.
What's the cause?
Science. Sleep science. Yeah. So, you know, they would have killed it at 22 days if they'd known that that was the point of no return. But they, whoopsie daisy, and then at the 10th rat, as I mentioned, died accidentally during a blood drawing procedure after 14 days of deprivation. It wasn't included in the calculations of survival time. So it was included in some other stuff, but they were trying to take blood from the rat after 2 weeks, and
they weren't very good at it.
They killed it, which, I'm not going to lie, honestly, getting a needle into a rat is, I've seen it happen so many times, they don't like it. They don't like it at all. I remember one of the rats... Talk a lot about rats in this episode. One of them has like this massive abscess on his face, and we're like, oh, cool, he's going to die. Awesome. Like, that's great. That's a great thing to happen to us again after this other rat.
Wow, two of them so self-centered. This poor rat's got an abscess on its face, and you're thinking about yourself.
He was more or less fine. That was the crazy part. He was genuinely more or less fine. Anyway, they stuck a needle in him. Really difficult job. Stuck a needle in him to try and draw it out. It was too thick. They ended up like literally just doing surgery on him and chopping it all out. And he was fine afterwards. The needle was genuinely the worst part of the entire ordeal. Don't ever try and stick a needle in a rat. It might end up in it dying, which in this case is honestly probably a relief. Imagine this rat being awake for 2 weeks, seeing the needle, being like, you know,
checkmate.
Exactly. So that's the total sleep deprivation in the rat experiment. So that was in 1989, I think I said. Yeah. So the year of our Lord, Taylor Swift, you know, she came to be in the same year that we found out that actually, yes, sleep deprivation is what kills you.
Are those two things causally linked? Did us finding that out lead to Taylor Swift?
You know what, Luke? I can't rule anything out. I really can't.
I would like to see that correlation, not causation graph. Was it called spurious correlations? Numbers of Taylor Swifts in the world? 0 to 1. Our knowledge about total sleep deprivation? Slightly more.
Oh my God. Well, you can't sleep if Taylor Swift's about it, right? She's constantly working. You gotta be on the grind.
We needed to do the experiment.
Just to
find out what was going to happen once Taylor Swift came along and made us all never sleep again.
So true. No, so we'll then move on to our final experiment of this episode, which is sleep loss can cause death through accumulation of, I'm going to spoil it if I continue saying this title, so I won't. It was in 2020 and it was published in Cell. Now, this one is a kind of cool one, right? This one kind of gave us an idea of what is actually killing you in sleep deprivation. Because if you notice, the through line here is that we didn't actually know what was going on, what was actually the cause of death in sleep deprivation. There was no an anatomical cause in the rat experiment in 1989. So, you know, we were like, ooh, what could be causing it? We know that there were sort of brain lesions and whatnot, but we don't know the absolute cause of death there. And this experiment sought to find that. So what they did was, instead of torturing rats, they tortured fruit flies. So they had, I think, three methods of keeping them awake. One was, I think, shaking them to keep them awake. I think the other one was stimulating them with heat, and it does it. There's a thing in their brain, hormones, that stops the sleeping thing from happening. I don't know. Look, I know a bit about Drosophila. I don't know that much about Drosophila, right? You want to talk about their genetics? Yeah, I know. I know some Drosophila genetics, you know. When it comes to how they fall asleep, not a bloody clue. Put them in the fridge. That's what I used to do. I say that's what I used to do as though I was doing it for fun. I should be clear. I was in university, and that's what you do to chill them out.
To chill them out?
Yeah.
Just to make them calm or fall asleep?
Slow them down and whatnot. Same with the bee that you killed.
I was waiting for that. Yes. Same with the bee that I killed.
Do you want to explain the bee that you killed?
Oh, do I have to? So, yeah, apparently I saw a thing online that was like, you can have a pet bee on a string if you get a bee and you put it in the freezer. And if you put the bees in the freezer, they just fall asleep. And then you can tie a string around them and then they wake up perfectly fine. And then you have a bee on a string. And I did that successfully with the second bee.
And the first bee
I forgot about, and then it was, well, it wasn't actually dead when I found it. It did come sort of back to life, but not enough to do anything.
Or for very long.
Or for... yeah, I yeah.
This is very much like that rat they put past the point of no return. You're like, well, it wasn't dead when I took it out of the freezer, you know. So did I really kill it by putting it in the freezer? Yes, Luke.
Yeah, not my finest moment. I did kill a bee. Bad vegan.
Bees kill themselves, you know. So it's
they do.
It's fine. It's fine.
He might have stung me, and then he'd have died anyway. So. And he was sleeping. It was
Can
fine.
Can you stop victim blaming, mate?
Sorry. It's actually hypothetical victim blaming.
Yeah, no. So, you know, yeah, you can put them in cold and they just kind of chill out or whatever. You know, pun intended, whatever. So they kept them awake by shaking them, stimulating them with heat or genetic modification. They literally removed genes that would let them fall asleep.
How do you know that a fruit fly has fallen asleep? Do you put little electrodes on its head like you do with the rats?
No, I don't think you can get electrodes that small, but no. I think you can just see that they're not moving and whatnot. Yeah. I think the reason we use them is because they were actually kind of useful in that. So Drosophila are a model organism, but that's, you know, like mice or rats. These are organisms that we know quite a lot about, and they're very useful for understanding humans because we can kind of relate to them in certain ways. We know what parts of their biology are similar to ours, and so they can be useful for studying things that you can't exactly study on humans. Like, for example, keeping a human awake for 22 days.
Only okay if they're a radio host.
Well, he did it for eight.
Eight, that's true.
He did it for eight.
And that okay. was a, that Only was... okay if they're a Twitch streamer. I think that's fine. There'd be some Twitch streamer who would sign that consent form.
I mean, they're not really people, but yeah, sure. Prove me wrong. You show me one Twitch streamer and you prove that they're a person, do it.
I was a Twitch streamer for a while, but during that time I did cease to be a person.
How much did they pay you to do that?
No comment. No, I actually did. I got paid because I was a Twitch streamer, but I actually just did it because it was the pandemic. Know? And oh, you know, goodness me, that paid some of my house. That was a good time, but no one remembers you now. No. But that was a good era. Well,
probably
because
they funneled their money into people like you. Yeah. And then...
Well, they still exist.
Do they still exist?
Yeah, they still exist. They have a cryptocurrency now. Yeah, no, what a pivot. But if you don't know, you now is like a precursor to Twitch, and for some reason they paid YouTubers quite handsomely for their time. I don't know why.
It really did.
It was weird, yeah.
Like stupid amounts of money per stream. And woof, woof. Anyway, moving on back to these wee fruit flies. So they were keeping them awake. They genetically modified them, some of them, so they would have to stay awake. They kept some of them awake, I think, with heat. So it was thermal stimulation. It's a long paper. This was not a short paper, okay? But there is actually a video explaining it on the Cell website. I've got that link down below. And there is also, you know, there's a whole nice, easy breakdown if you want to read it, which is really great. It's the kind of stuff I love seeing, where it's the actual people that did the paper themselves doing this little bits to camera and just being like, this is what this means, and that's what that means. I love it. It's great. Makes my job way easier and also makes it kind of obsolete. But we'll move on. So they basically were trying to figure out what was killing them. And so after, you know, the flies were dying from lack of sleep, and when they were getting up to that point as well, they were kind of looking at them and they found that there was a lot of stuff going on in the guts of the flies. The other organs all looked okay, but specifically the flies' guts were very obviously something was going wrong. Something was different, right? So what they found was that ROS, reactive oxygen species, or ROS, right? Whichever one. If I say ROS or ROS, it means reactive oxygen species. Do you know what those are?
Species that breathe oxygen and also react to their environment?
No, so it's when I say species, it's...
Or they react oxygen with stuff?
No, so it's not species as in living things, as in oxygen that is reactive, right? So do you know antioxidants?
Yes, yeah.
Right.
I wondered if this was going to have something to do with antioxidants, because you clear those up in your sleep, I think, don't you?
Yes, exactly. So reactive oxygen species, they're a normal thing. Antioxidants, you'll know about antioxidants. Those are against those reactive oxygen species, essentially. So they are reactive oxygen species, ROS, ROS. They are highly reactive sort of chemicals that are formed from diatomic oxygen. And diatomic means, so two oxygen atoms joined together.
Yep.
There are a bunch of diatomic molecules, diatomic elements. They basically come in pairs. Mm-hmm. Is what you need to know. They make molecules with two of them. I think. Oh gosh, am I going back to high school chemistry? What's another diatomic molecule? Is chlorine, maybe? Not chlorine. Chlorine, maybe? Oh, why am I doing this? Why am I putting myself on the spot here? Oh, okay, do you know what? I'll check and I'll maybe cut it out, or maybe I won't. You can see how silly I am. But yeah, there are some elements that basically stick in pairs, right? So diatomic oxygen can produce these highly reactive sort of chemicals that can be not very good for your body. And Luke, do you know anything about antioxidants, sleep, any of that sort of stuff?
Well, yeah, I was thinking that it might have something to do with antioxidants when you said build up of and then you stopped yourself, because I think you clear away antioxidants in your sleep, don't you?
So you'll clear away the reactive oxygen species during
You use antioxidants in your to clear away the oxidants.
Basically, yeah. So they found like a buildup of these reactive oxygen species. They found a buildup of them in the gut, and it says, you know, that it was very, very obvious, right? I mean, if you go to that website that I mentioned, you can look at the pictures, and it's like lit up like a Christmas tree. And you know, that doesn't necessarily prove that the reactive oxygen species, you know, are the ones that are doing the killing necessarily. So they went on to do some further tests on this, right? So what do you think they might have done to find out whether it was those ROS molecules that were the problem?
Put a bunch of ROS molecules in a healthy fruit fly.
Oh, that's a really interesting way of doing it. That's an interesting way of doing it. They actually kind of did the opposite. They loaded them with antioxidants, right?
When they'd already deprived them of sleep.
Yeah, so they deprived them of sleep and they...
made them eat blueberries.
Yeah. Blueberries are high in antioxidants. And so they basically gave them antioxidants to lower the ROS level to closer to normal. And those flies actually lived, I think, just a couple days shorter than their normal lifespan, which...
Oh, wow. So it was really successful.
Yeah, it was really successful. I mean, bear in mind, these are flies.
So I can do a Twitch stream.
No.
Beating the world record and eating loads of blue. I could beat both world records. Most blueberries eaten and most time stayed awake.
I'm going to continue. And you're going to stop. So
I think that's how you make this Mr. Beast video ethical. You just have loads
There is no way to make a Mr. Beast video ethical. There isn't. Okay? There's not. I'm sorry. Like, there just is... The only way to make it ethical is to not make a bloody video out of... Okay. Moving back on to the science that we're talking about. They proved that it was these ROS molecules that were killing them by giving them a bunch of antioxidants. But... they had to find out, well, maybe it's some other mechanism in eating antioxidants, you know, that is stopping them from dying. How do we know that it's the antioxidants themselves? So what they did was they genetically modified the flies again. So basically, I think, made them produce more antioxidants in their guts specifically. Mm. So they weren't having to go through the process of eating them, you know, so they could remove that as a factor. And yeah, they found that, yeah, you know, that still reduced, you know, increased their lifespan, you know, compared to the flies that were just being kept awake without the antioxidants. So it seems that at least in Drosophila, I think they also studied this in mice as well. They had a little look at mice to look at it in a sort of mammal as well, right? They found that it seems to be a buildup of reactive oxygen species that can cause death through, you know, sleep deprivation. And as you mentioned there, Luke, yeah, it is sort of, you know, sleep is a point where you do clear out sort of these things from your body. And so a buildup of those in the gut could cause, you know, I mean, and it also would could potentially explain, I think, as well, the rats dying in that other experiment we mentioned, you know, where they were sort of malnourished, but had a higher energy expenditure. Yeah, so...
Well, it's because their gut's not working properly anymore or something.
Yeah, something along those lines, absolutely, right? And so we don't know what the exact mechanism is. We know it's oxidative stress, but... we don't really know specifically what's going on. We also want to find out if it can apply to humans, whether, you know, giving certain antioxidants can help with sleep deprivation when it can't be avoided. I know what you're going to say. But no. But yeah, no.
I know there'd be a bunch of YouTubers who'd say yes to this video.
Yeah, I know. But no, I mean, look, and bear in mind, these are fruit flies, right? The amount of antioxidants you need to give them is probably not going to be that much. They're tiny. Whereas a human... probably a lot, right? So I doubt you can probably get it just through eating a handful of blueberries, right? But It's also not going to stop you from feeling tired.
It's one way to find out.
It's also not going to stop you from, it's not going to stop you from hallucinating probably as well, right? You're still probably going to feel quite tired and all of that sort of stuff,
that
right?
Makes the video even better.
And we don't know if this applies to humans, which is something we still need to find out. But yeah, we know that obviously sleep is something that's quite essential because pretty much every bloody animal does it, right? Like I off the top of my head can't think of one that doesn't, right? Yeah, sleep is fairly ubiquitous.
Elon Musk
is a loser. What's
he
your
doesn't,
point?
He doesn't sleep.
No, he does.
He doesn't sleep much, apparently.
Really?
He claims not to sleep very much. He claims
really?
He likes, I survive on 5 hours sleep. I'm
Maybe
so
that's why he's so bad at all of his
big.
Jobs.
Get some sleep. Or eat some blueberries, Elon. Just eat some blueberries and you'll be better at Twitter.
Get some sleep. Get some sleep and maybe you won't make such rash decisions like buying Twitter and then running it into the ground. The last good social media site. And now Facebook have a worse version of it. There, I said it. Everyone's
Ooh,
also been saying it.
Controversial.
It's not controversial. But yeah, no. So they found all of that. As I said, the idea is to try and figure out, you know, whether it's applicable to humans and all of that sort of stuff. But what we found is that when we deprive fruit flies of sleep, they will die after a certain period of time. But we can prevent those deaths by giving them antioxidants. We don't know whether that applies to humans yet, but this is a really interesting avenue to look down. And that is sort of the episode on sleep deprivation.
That was brilliant. Thank you. I learned so much.
Well, there's just one more thing for us to do, Luke. It's a quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. No sleep edition.
So the rules for the quickfire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between Luke and the audience. The first person to answer the question correctly after finishing asking the question wins. What do they win, Luke?
Some antioxidants.
Okay. And the question for you is, how many hours did Peter Stripp stay awake?
4. It was 8 days, more than 8 days, but less than 9 days. Sorry, it was, 100 and something, 205, 204, 201, 201.
Ding, 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 that is correct. I'm sure you beat Luke, so he's going to have to give you a handful of blueberries, I'm sure. Well, that is all from us, but before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Danito and Glitch Rabbit, and thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe to new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com. SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCore everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Bye.
Bye.